I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 108 of Digital Divination. Let us begin with our traditional
the traditional disclaimer.
Yes.
I am an employee of Wizards of the Coast, and the opinions I express here are mine and not theirs.
And also with you.
Yes. Is that how it's supposed to go?
I get, or amen, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what? I think you should make a Georgian chant for that. That would sound really good.
Wait, we'll do it again. I'll do it in the background.
Words go, have it scroll up like the Star Wars intro, yes. Right?
That's yes.
That too.
Speaking of Star Wars intro, Ron, have you listened to our Scum and Villainy yet?
No. Like the Scum and Villainy that I'm in? No.
No.
That one's not up yet.
That one's not up yet, but the other ones before you.
No, I haven't listened to that. No, I started that one.
Okay.
But I was in the car and somebody called. I was like settled in for it. See, let me tell you where I listen to these. And I recommend that people listen to these this way. Okay. Like when I'm on like a commute or I'm driving someplace, I'll be like, okay, this is a thing that I can hit play and I don't have to be fiddling with my phone or anything like that. It's like, it'll just play. And then, you know, about the time I get wherever I'm going, right, then it's over. Like I've listened to the whole thing and it's kind of nice. But I started and then somebody called. I think somebody in my family called because they needed something. And then I had to turn around and go back for something. So I got interrupted and never back to it.
But you started.
And I was actually a little bit sick. So I haven't been going into the office quite as much. So less commuting.
Did you get the start of it though?
The intro.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I got just as far as the intro.
Okay. How do you like the music?
It seemed to be pretty engaging. Okay. I liked it.
Okay.
This is the music that you like. It's the music that you paid for.
Yeah. Right? It's my new music. You hadn't listened to it yet. And then I asked Jason about it when we were recording our latest episode of Scum and Villainy. So I was kind of curious what your thoughts of it, because I was trying to evoke a very kind of specific theme, which Jason got right off the bat.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, very Firefly kind of, you know, a little bit of Western, but a little more modern than that is kind of, anyway.
A little sort of space Western-y kind of.
Yes.
There is, you know, one thing that I've heard, because I've been listening to some other podcast. I don't know if I mentioned this. We don't do on our podcasts very many or ever previously ons. And I feel like a lot of people do previously ons. But then every time I hear it, I think this sounds like a lot of work. Because it's not just somebody saying previously, here's the things you need to know. It's actually they're cutting some, you know, dialogue or whatever from earlier. And then this seems like a lot of effort.
You can do that if you're planning to do that. When you edit, what you do is, okay, I've come to a really cool sounding thing where somebody says a really weird thing, right? A little snippet. And then you just kind of copy that and dump it over to, next time I'm going to use this. That is a more advanced thing. If we decided we needed to do that, I could. I just haven't got around to it.
Even more advanced than that. Yeah. Okay. So we get AI to listen to it and AI picks out what it thinks makes a good previously on. And that's what we do. No?
No. All right. No, Ron. No.
There's no way that could actually work out. That would be horrifying to see whatever it
worked that way.
Well, it can't tell. It can't
exactly
listen to it to tell what's, it won't, you know, it won't. It doesn't think, right? That's the thing. Oh, man. I had somebody approach me about AI and teaching our students the importance of how to use AI in business to do things, because there's all the stuff out there how AI is going to take over in business and everything. And it's like, she doesn't understand that AI isn't this intelligence that can solve things, right? It's more just drawing from stuff that was out there already, and if all the stuff out there already is junk,
you're gonna get is
junk.
But even if the stuff out there is great, a lot of it will only give you junk because it doesn't know what great is.
Right.
And what I think would probably happen, let me make my guess, if we did like, here's the AI intro.
Yes.
If it knew enough about like podcast intros, what it would do is it would catch maybe inflections or rise and fall of voices or something just before people laugh or whatever. Yeah. And then it'll just kind of randomly grab those and then put them together in a way that it thinks matches the same sort of dialogue rise and fall or the things that people are laughing about, but it would be not at all connected and not at all actually like amusing because it doesn't know enough about what funny is in order to build that out. I think it would actually be sort of horrifying, which makes me even more curious about what
that reminds me. I remember reading about a Kickstarter campaign or something on social media where basically an AI-driven GM, basically, right? So there's a company trying to do this where you don't, you know, one of the big issues that players have for groups is nobody seems, I don't know where they find these groups, but they have groups of people don't actually want a GM. They all just want to play. I can you imagine that?
No, because all I want to do is GM.
I'm really happy GM. When I don't GM enough, I have to go form some other group so I can be a GM with it.
But apparently we're anomalies in that regard. Okay. And there's some groups where people actually don't want a GM. And so there's a company, I don't know the specifics on this, that is basically making a AI GM that's supposed to run things through for the players. And I just can't imagine how that's going to work.
Well, I hope it's not very good. And here's why I hope it's not very good.
Yeah.
Because the reason I think that a lot of players don't like to become a GM, if I can guess, it's some combination of probably that it feels like a lot of work that they would have to do. It feels like you have to know the game better than they think they do. Right? You feel like, oh, if a player throws something at me, I have to know every rule in every situation or something like that. Or they feel like they can't come up with like, you know, really engaging, you know, mystery plots or things like that. And I feel like seeing something that's supposed to be like an AI GM fail at all three of those probably get players to think, oh, I could do at least that good, right? Because all three of those things are very easily addressable, right?
Right.
The feeling like you need to have a lot of prep there's a lot of advice about, you know, minimal prep, or what do you do if you only have an hour before the game? What do you do if you only have 4 hours in the week before the game or whatever? Knowing the rules, you don't need to know any more as a GM than you do as a player. You just have kind of the referee, like your call is kind of final at the time, but you're still working it out with your friends. And as far as the plots and things, the barest, thinnest plot is all players need to make everything go terrible in a lot of different ways. Anyway, that turned into a little bit of a lecture, but I think my point is, if it isn't very good, I think a lot of people will DM if they have like a not very good experience, because it kind of triggers that. Well, I can do that. I can do at least that good.
Yeah, All I want is a John Henry situation where I'm DMing up against this artificial GM at the same time to see how far each of us can get.
Oh, like a competition.
Do neither of you know who John Henry is? I got blank stares from both of you.
No.
Sorry. yeah, competition.
Right. Well, I was just trying to think how that actually would work, because it's, you know, it's so, as we talked about last time with player-driven narratives, a lot of it's so player-driven. I would think an AI would adapt in just a weird way when the players went off the rails, right? Compared to a GM or DM who said, oh, okay, well, they're really interested in, I was thinking about this in our Scum and Villainy thing. Somebody, we got really interested in one thing. And then all of a sudden Jason pivoted and said, okay, well, we're going to look at that and, you know, how we're going to be doing that thing and stuff.
Well, and that reaction is exactly the reason that people come to role-playing games, is that sort of openness. Now, don't get me wrong. Some of the games are fantastic, and you guys are both lucky I'm even here, because I just entered the final area in Baldur's Gate 3, so I'm almost done with my first playthrough. It's really good, but it's not... There are plenty of times I find myself saying, you know, if this were the kind of thing going on at the table, here's this weird oddball thing that I might recommend or might even ask the other players, hey, what do you think if we try something like this? That's just not even an option in a machine generated story. That's why I like role playing games as much as I do.
Mm-hmm. Have you played Baldur's Gate, Jason?
Not yet. No, I'm a little. Maybe a while back, I kind of burned out on big, sweeping, party-driven role-playing games. And so I haven't been able to, like, I can't get further than that, the opening bits, to the point where I get distracted by too many other games, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I'm afraid of getting sucked in, and I have to wait till I have I'm on sabbatical next year, so I'm thinking, I get a year. Maybe that's a good time to get sucked into something.
I mean, just the opening bit of Baldur's Gate 3 is fantastic. Yeah. Now, but I'm coming from an entirely different – I'm coming from the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Jason, I have not – I mean, I remember when my kids who are now like 13 and 15 were like 1 and 3 that I had an Xbox and I really liked Mass Effect and Halo, and those were kind of neat. But that was the last time I was ever in any kind of, you know, big sweeping, you know, party driven sort of stories like this. And so the gap in between those stories, which were great and I had a really good time, and Baldur's Gate 3, which I've first gotten into, is a huge gap. And I found myself really sort of impressed in a lot of ways that people who'd been playing all along would be like, yeah, that's, you know, I'm sure there are like plenty of things that I thought, it's amazing that that the game would be prepared for you to do X, Y, or Z, only to be told, you know, games have been prepared for that for, you know, the last 5 years, Ron.
Actually, Baldur's Gate, from what I've heard, Baldur's Gate 3 is a big step forward. It's not necessarily a step forward exactly so much as that Larian put in so much time and effort into those little things that other companies or developers might not put into the game. So it's just a matter of, what you got here is a intricately crafted piece of entertainment that you're able to take advantage of. That so I don't think you've missed much. I don't think you've missed this sort of leap forward what I've heard Baldur's Gate 3 is.
Oh, then I came in at the right time then, maybe.
Now it's interesting that, you know, Ron is doing this at behest of his company, so his opinions about Baldur's Gate 3 are his own. But his company
had the coordination with Larian Studios, right? Yeah. This is it makes me better at my job to know what people who think Dungeons & Dragons plays like in Baldur's Gate 3 plays like. And there's a number of things that I see happen in the game that I'm like, wait, that can't possibly be a rule in our game, because all these other sort of things would come off of it and it would not be best for the game necessarily. Works great within the confines of the Baldur's Gate 3 game. But there's a lot of sort of, you know, narrative elements that are the kind of things that we wouldn't necessarily adopt when we were doing products, but I mean, some narrative elements that we would. And so it's really interesting to see from that perspective.
Does that mean we might see some design work based around some of these narrative elements?
Well, this has been kind of interesting. I have not yet, for example, I have not yet played a monk in Baldur's Gate 3, but somebody was telling me that they did monks differently than they are in the 2014 Player's Handbook. Well, we also did monks very differently in the 2024 Player's Handbook. You can see in the Unearthed Arcanas that we've come out with that we've revised monks to make them sort of a lot more, you know, approachable, and, you know, we think that people are going to like them a whole lot better. But I'd bet you dollars to donuts we did it in a different way that Larian did in Baldur's Gate 3, which makes me super curious now once I finish up and then I restart, because I inevitably will, right? Let me see what they did with the monks. Let me see what they did with rangers. And things that they did differently there. I do think that there is a maybe a little bit of a risk in the kind of maybe I don't want to say necessarily binary thinking, unless I'm doing it as a pun, right? For people who've played Baldur's Gate 3 to think maybe that's all D&D is, when in fact the game is actually, as we were just talking about, a whole lot more improv and a whole lot more possibility and potential than that. I think that there's a it's a really good starting place for a sort of tabletop role-playing game, with just all the bells and whistles as far as, you know, options about what you can do in the story. And it's beautiful to look at, and you know, it's just kind of amazing. I never played Baldur's Gate 1 or Baldur's Gate 2, and so there's some Easter egg things going on where people are like, oh, this is a character from one of those early games. I am aware who that character is, but I have no experience with them otherwise because I didn't play those.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a good comp for Starfinder. I mean, Starfield came out, and that doesn't seem super Starfinder like to me for a video
game. It's very much science fiction more than science fantasy.
Yeah, hard science. Yeah,
More hard science. I would play The Outer Worlds. It just was by Obsidian, who did like Fallout New Vegas and some other stuff. That's very, that felt Starfinder-ish to me, because it had a, it was still, it didn't have any like it didn't have the magic stuff or the other you know, alien species in it, but it had a little more of a, it had some ludicrous guns first, you know, it had like a shrinking gun and a freeze ray gun, which is more of a, that's more fun, more elemental sort of guns and other weird things that you could do with that. So it had a little super science involved in there. And it had a really good, some tongue in cheek stuff about capitalism that I thought was enjoyable.
What about the Star Wars games?
It depends on which kind of a game you want. The Jedi Survivor, Jedi Fallen Order games are, you know, because they're more like Dark Souls-y. So that's just sort of being a Jedi. You know, go way back to the old Knights of the Old Republic games.
Knights of the Old Republic? I played that way back in the day, and that was phenomenal.
That's a little bit more. You get a party, and, you know, it's very much like...
exactly what we were talking about,
The one that's coming out later this year is which I thought was funny, because you know, the it got sort of the trailer drop, one of the trailer drop for it, that when we were just about starting Scum and Villainy, about being an outlaw in the sort of post or somewhere in the Empire day, you know, or you know, somewhere in the original trilogy days, and going around it and ticking off crime.
What is this? Is this the Star Wars Outlaws?
Yeah, Star Wars Outlaws. Yeah.
Okay.
Looks interesting.
Yeah, literally, like right when we were starting to record our first episode of Scum and Villainy, that dropped that day, the same day I think it was.
Oh, wow.
So, So Jason, I think, sent the clip around, and I think Mark or somebody said, oh, wait, is this what we're playing?
No. I mean, a little bit.
I mean, that would be awesome, except it would require time travel. That would...
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So, you know, when we look at these games, right, there is some sort of programming in that kind of mimics what an AI GM or DM would do, but it's based more on if-then logic. And Baldur's Gate 3 just says there's a whole lot of ifs that you can go through.
That's right.
You know,
you can't, you don't have, nobody has to make up, either AI GM or real person GM, nobody has to make up what this animal might say if you cast Speak with Animals on it. They just put in what every single animal would say when you cast Speak with Animals on it.
So, yeah, that's kind of interesting. So, yeah, definitely. I think in the future, I think more and more people, I mean, this is something Evil Genius Games, you know, was talking about trying to do, is to use AI to kind of drive some of their storylines and stuff that caused some issues, I think, with some of their folks there. But I think more and more companies are looking at how can we use AI in part of the process that we're going through. And in business, this is where it's a little different. This is where I came across it. Oftentimes you have like large data sets where there's repetitive type of decision making you have to make based on some parameters of the data. And it's not really, I mean, we were calling it AI now, but basically we just call that decision rules for decades. Mm-hmm. You know, and now it's like, oh, wait, hey, you're saying a computer is deciding that. That's AI. It's like, well, no, we've just kind of put a whole bunch of if-then statements in. And when it's this, then we send it over here. And when it's not, we send it over here. And then we've happened to label these things as, oh, this is really good ideas and this is bad ideas. We shouldn't invest there or whatever it is.
Right. So, but if you say AI, you can get more venture capital, John. That's the whole point.
That's what, you know, and it's, it's people, you know, people want to hire folks that have experience with that. And, you know, it's funny. Well, it's ironic, I guess, more than funny. In the creative space, people understand what AI is all about more so than in the business space. Mm-hmm. Business space is looking at it as a tool, but they don't really understand how the tool works.
Well, and in the medical space too, I don't know, I don't want to go into a lot of specific detail, but I will say that I'm an attorney who does health law. And one of the clients I've been working with has been using AI in order to help providers give medical care faster and better. That is, you know, so if you can tell a professional, not here's how you make this medical decision, but based on, you know, a couple of decades of data, here's a thing you might think about before you think about other things based on what I'm, you know, seeing here. That's very useful. That's very helpful for delivering care. And that's seen as widely as a positive. And so it's interesting to me to have one foot in an industry where AI can be seen, is being seen as a big positive. And in another one where it's taking away the sort of the creative, most creative elements. When you talk about an AI GM, I think what people don't want, what they feel, what they probably don't need, you're not going to go to any GM and say, hey, we can give you an AI GM. And what it's going to do is it's going to make up all the interesting stories and you've just got to do all the math. That's nobody's looking for it. They want the opposite. They want, I want to have all these interesting stories and I want to have somebody else calculate all the encounters
and
do all the math for me.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that about medical doctors. So, you know, my PhD is in decision making, and there's a interesting, one of the things I look at is interactive decision making and decision tools. Mm-hmm. And in the medical field, there's actually been a lot of research on the use of software or for decision tools in diagnoses. And what they found is that when doctors use decision tools that kind of step them through all the specific symptoms that would arrive at a diagnosis, they tend to be way more accurate than when they just kind of do it on their own, because doctors tend to think of things in isolation and focus on things that are not as relevant as they should, right? They're always kind of looking at outliers and things like that. And oftentimes they might miss the more obvious symptoms. Anyway, that's from this particular research. So it makes sense to me that they would be more, well, doctors never thought that they would, that a decision tool would do better than them. But it makes sense that the decision tool with AI could just, this is research for like 30 years ago that, you know, that was going on and discovering this. And it's interesting for me to hear that now it's being more accepted, because back then it wasn't. It was like,
well, it's still, you know. The intersection of law and medicine, though, and this is what nobody's tuned into this podcast for. We're going to say it anyway. Right. The intersection of law, like there are legal obligations under being a provider, right? The practice of medicine must be done by a person, not a machine.
Yeah.
And so in a lot of ways, the physicians, I can see why they'd be reluctant, because their licensure is depending upon the decisions they make. And so something that's being positioned as a tool to help them make the decisions better, faster, more accurate, especially faster in this day and age of sort of speeding that along, is being seen as a real win. Whereas I can see earlier, the resistance you describe about people saying, well, I don't want something else making the decisions for me, right? Of course I know better. And I think that the thing that's kind of positioned now is, yes, you do know better, but we want to help you make your better decisions faster.
Right, right.
So there we go. There's our law and medicine detour through yeah. AI. There is a, but even in that case, it doesn't have, AI isn't producing the sort of creative content than in the gaming space you see so many people pushing back against, where it's trying to create art by stealing art from other people in order to sort of mush it together into a blob, or steal words by mushing them together into a blob. Mm-hmm. Because that's it seems like it's an entirely different thing. And when I say I see AI being used sort of in two different industries, and it's because we're being used in dramatically different ways.
Right. One's being generative, trying to create things. The other one is being more analytical, trying to show mm-hmm. things yep. that are out there. So I don't know. I didn't realize this was going to become an AI discussion
an
today.
An AI episode.
That's a great topic. Any last words on AI in GMing, Jason?
Oh, it'll never do it. because until we get literally brains in jars, the computers are not going to be good enough to be able to synthesize new things out of old things, which is what our human brains do all the time.
Right.
They can see, story A and story B and come up with story C and not just story AB. I actually in a lot of ways dislike the term artificial intelligence the way it's being sort of broadly applied to everything.
I think it's wrong. Yeah.
Because it isn't. It's not intelligent at all. And we won't have actual science fiction artificial intelligence for a while, if we ever get it at all.
Let me ask you one thing specifically. For my last thought, I'll ask for Jason's last thought about something else.
Sure.
One thing that I've done in my home games to help speed some of the design along, and playing around with ChatGPT, is that I asked it to design a puzzle. My players are in a library, and I'm like, I want them to collect books in order to solve a puzzle. Give me a fantasy library puzzle that would involve books. And it gave me one that I didn't like. And I'm like, no, I think that's too easy. Give me one that's harder. And it was like, okay, here's one that's harder. And I ended up tweaking it a little bit. But a puzzle that you're building in an adventure is just kind of a quick step to get to something else sometimes.
Sure.
I mean, sometimes you build a whole adventure around a puzzle. We could do a whole episode about puzzles, I know. But I found it particularly handy to save me some time in putting together what was ultimately going to be a trick to get the characters to run around the library and engage in a couple of other encounters while they were doing that. I felt like that worked pretty well, and it was pretty contained. And it went over pretty well with the players that I used it for. Now I do want to make sure that I'm clear that this was something that I used for my own table, because I think there's a very big risk of, if you try to do something and then publish it as your own, I don't know that it didn't steal other people's puzzles and put
probably
them
did. Yeah,
probably did.
Yeah, probably did. Yeah.
So I certainly am not going to pass that off on my own. And frankly, after the session, I even told my players, hey, this was an AI thing. What did you think? But I know that the intersection of gaming and puzzles is something close to your heart, Jason. Was that just anathema then? What I describe? What do you think?
I mean, I wouldn't have done it, but also I have, I have more experience with making puzzles from scratch and stuff like that. But also, if I was in a rush, I would, and I wanted to put a puzzle in an adventure in that evening. I mean, I don't think for a home game, I don't think there's anything wrong with literally searching for a puzzle on the internet, using mm-hmm. it, and maybe changing some of the nouns in it or something, so that it works. And because it works because someone else has done it, and you're just sort of putting a different coat of paint on it, and that's fine for home games. You do that with story all the time. What's the Magnificent Seven but the Seven Samurai with a cowboy coat of paint on it, right? That's just sort of things that it's easy to do as a GM and saves that time that you need instead of having to come up with. Because, there's not a ton of original stories out there, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's always sort of one variation or the other. But, you're just trying to have fun with your friends. You don't need to necessarily what you were talking about earlier about like putting in, is it a lot of work to GM? It is a lot of work to GM, but you can always make things easier on yourself by recognizing the fact that when you're doing it for your friends, you're all there to have a good time. And who cares if it doesn't, if the plot is a colander that doesn't hold even a drop of water.
Yes.
You're having fun. Do you get it? And at the end, and there's the things you can do at the end. I was like, oh, what was that earlier? I think you said the opposite half an hour ago. I was like, yeah, I probably did, but whatever. I meant this. It was all about this. Instead,
just move on. Yeah.
We can move on. It's fine. It's fun. We had a fun time.
Well, and oftentimes those side trips like that end up being so much more fun because, you know, the players start getting into it and then you start getting into it and just kind of snowballs rather than trying to railroad them back to, oh, wait. This is the storyline I created and spent all my time working on. And that's that. Honestly, this is what I like about Scum and Villainy a lot because it is just so open. You know, like in the last episode that we were in that Ron was able to join us in on, you know, it's like, how are we going to solve this problem? And it's like, things just kind of fall out of thin air or ideas, and Jason can just kind of run with it. You know, there's no set. Oh, no, wait. The heroes would do this, and then this will happen. It's like, well, we'll just see. Yeah, I really enjoy that.
But it's different, you know, than when you're writing something for publication or whatever. You do have to kind of like think a little bit about like what's the most obvious thing? Write the most about that. What's another thing? But you know, give the GM advice that would be like, oh, if something along this line happens, you can kind of go this way, or you can tweak this chase to be more about a debate by changing a couple words. You know, take the pieces of the chase and spread them out all over the place. If people are splitting up, again, it comes down to like a lot of GMing is improv. It's using your brain to sort of engage in a story with a bunch of other people's brains, which is, you know, I don't think is something that a computer can do yet. We can tell it to just do lots of if then statements, and oh, yeah, that's great. And those you can, if you get down to the, you know, you got to, you know, how many people on Larian Studios had to sit down and come up with, you know, 79 if then statements for this one bit and a thing, right? Like that's what makes it so good, is because you can see the care taken in deciding, oh, wouldn't it be hilarious if they cast Speak with Animals on this horse? Oh, what would the horse say? Oh, let's throw a couple lines in there. And we get that, record that voice. Wet. And what if, 1% of the people do that? Who cares, right? You tend to, you know, we've gotten to a point with games at any rate, you know, say what they will about like how large they are, but like the computers can do, you can do a lot of the programming, compress it into the fact that it is no longer has to be only 64 kilobyte disks, you know, space, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, this is going to be a question that I don't know if either of you will have this experience. Did either of you play Zork?
I was just about to talk about interactive fiction, because that is a big passion of mine. Yeah. And I had all those games, and I have attempted to write a few of those. And that is, it becomes very, it's difficult to try to think of like different verbs and what does them program, what they mean, and that kind of stuff.
That's the one where you keep getting lost and eaten by a Gru. Is that, am I remembering?
If you go
that
into the dark, you'll get eaten by a Gru.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I have played that.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I just remember way back in the day when we first got computers, and it was all, you know, text driven, you know, and it very simple, right? Very simple choices that you could make. And if you did something random, right, then you went into the dark and got eaten by it.
So you'd have a, you know, what you type in was read by a parser, right?
Right.
Parse the language that you wrote, and if it didn't understand it, it would just say, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
Hey, have you guys seen or heard of a game called Parsley?
I have, yeah.
I have not.
It's phenomenal. It's like those old text-based games, but around a gaming table, where somebody gets to be as sort of unapproachably irrational as some of those games are, while the rest of the players are shouting out, like, go west, go wet, pick up flower, there is no flower here. Oh, we have to go north again. Go north and then go west. I don't understand that. Go north. You have gone north. Go west. There is a flower here. We picked the flower. I mean, it ends up being a lot of fun. Well, yeah. A lot of my kids, actually, they get so delightfully frustrated. Yeah. They love it.
Do you play that? And from what I've seen people play it, you do one command per person. You go around in a circle, right?
You go around. Yeah, and that way, if somebody, you know, just doing it around a campfire is just as easy, right? You know, because you just kind of go around in the circle. We've done that out camping. We've done it around our gaming table. It's, give everybody a thing. But then you end up invariably with the players who screw something up and they want the next person to, no, here's what you need to say. And the person after them is like, no, here's what. Anyway, it ends up being a sort of a much more cross chatter than even the cross chatter of a normal gaming table has by the time you're done.
So one person has to remember what the whole thing is.
Well, they have a pamphlet.
Right? You've got a book. Oh, okay. Yeah, you've got a book that tells you what everything is.
Okay,
and the book has the map of knowing where everything is. And, the book that I have is something like, you know, 13 or 15 different, you know, Action Castle, Action Castle 2, Action Castle 3, you know, the same way they used to do all those old text-driven things, supplement. I programmed some of those, actually. I was in programming initially for a little bit. I had a project that was like trying to investigate an old, you know, pyramid ruins, kind of vaguely Indiana Jonesy one, but it was all text-based.
Yeah, the greatest graphics are your imagination, is a
tagline.
Swear, yeah.
Now, when you all first started playing role-playing games, did you ever have like a mapper? Like you would have graph paper? Like, and so the GM is kind of describing where you're going. GM's not showing you a map. They're just describing it. And then you had to like draw the map as you're moving along to get it.
I don't think I would ever play a game that was that detailed, that focused on mapping.
That's something our party always did.
And there was a real skill to demonstrated incompetence there. And let me go, you know, the old trope of, oh, honey, I just couldn't figure out the washing machine. I'm sorry. Let me just do it for you then.
Exactly.
It was the same kind of thing with mapping. It was like, okay, well, there's a corridor. It looks like it goes 20 feet and it opens up into a room that's 30 feet square with a door in the middle of the north wall. Like this? No, it's not like that. Like this? Let me just do it for you. So we would end up having the TM would be doing most of the mapping just because we were just all terrible at it and no incentive to get better
We always like, so my DM back in the day was Rob Helm, and he always made very detailed maps and stuff and things like that. And then we had a couple of people, and I think it was my stepbrother, Sean, who just loved mapping it. And at the end, it was always fun to kind of compare. What they ended up looking like. So I just thinking back in the day, text driven thing, you know, without all the props that we have now.
I mean, I would 100% be making maps in my, you know, playing like Ultima or Might and Magic, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
On a graph paper. Yeah, that all, of course, you have to do that to know where the heck you were. But or in old text adventures, you know, the box and line method is
classic. When you're playing, like you have a piece of paper to draw kind of where you're going and try to figure it out. Yeah. You know?
And then you get those mazes where if you go north from one room, but you have to go west to go back to the same room. Nonsense. Yeah. Frustrating nonsense.
Right. Well, I think this is an interesting segue into AI and
To sort of tie it all up is I can't remember what it's called, but there is basically an AI driven text adventure where you could literally type anything you want and it would be like, okay, here we go. I don't know where it's pulling all of the stuff from, but like, and it was sort of big back in the day, but they'd be like, oh, it started, and so like, oh, you're a thing, and they go north. There's an ogre here. And then you could type like, dance the merengue with the ogre. So you dance with the ogre. And then it would like, just, it would always go, it's just bonkers. I think it might be called Endless Dungeon or something like that.
But wow.
Like,
ooh, you just
no. That's not called that. I know. I opened up a window. It's not Endless Dungeon. That's an actual video game. But there's some you can look it up. I'm sure. Yeah. But that sort of ties everything back in. But sort of like does the thing that it doesn't. But it doesn't like it's nonsense. It becomes nonsensical. Like the thing you were sort of mentioning,
right.
Ron, right. earlier, is like, which what would maybe happen? The, it would be this. Yeah,
that's
it would
the just lesson, be like, I think, is that it becomes ultimately it is, yeah. nonsense.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, until next time, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.